Gryffindor's scarf in the wash without asking, and made Elsa take another scarf, a vomit green one. Mum knows Elsa hates green. She really lacks empathy sometimes, that woman. Our friend had been lying on Granny's bed like a sphinx outside a pyramid. Elsa stood transfixed in the hall, staring at that gigantic black head and terrifying, depthless eyes. Granny had come out of the kitchen and was putting on her coat as if it was the most natural thing in the whole universe to have the biggest thing ever lying on her bed.
"What is that thing?"
Elsa had whispered. Granny carried on rolling her cigarette and replied indifferently, "This is our friend. He won't hurt you if you don't hurt him." Easy for her to say, Elsa thought. How was she supposed to know what would provoke one of those? Once, one of the girls at school had hit her because she had an ugly scarf. That was apparently all Elsa had done to her, and she got hit for it. And so Elsa stood there, her usual scarf in the wash, and in its place an ugly scarf chosen by her mother, worrying that vomit green might provoke the beast. In the end, Elsa explained that it was her mum's scarf, not hers, and her mum had terrible taste, before backing away towards the door. Our friend just stared at her. Or at least that was what Elsa thought, if she was right in thinking those were its eyes. And then it also bared its teeth. Elsa was almost sure of it. But Granny just muttered something about kids, you know, and rolled her eyes at our friend. Then she went to find the keys to Renault, and then she and Elsa went to the dinosaur exhibition. Granny left the front door wide open, Elsa remembers, and when they sat in Renault and Elsa asked what our friend was doing in Granny's flat, Granny just answered, "Visiting." When Elsa asked why it was always barking behind its door, Granny answered cheerily,
"Barking? Ha! It only does that when Brit Marie goes past."
And when Elsa asked why, Granny grinned from ear to ear and answered,
"Because that's what he likes doing."
And then Elsa had asked who our friend lived with. And then Granny said,
"Not everyone needs to live with someone. Good God, for instance, I don't live with anybody."
And even though Elsa insisted that this might have some connection with the fact that Granny was not a D.O.G., Granny never explained anything else about it. And now, here Elsa stands on the landing, peeling off sweet wrappers from the dime chocolate. She throws in the first one so quickly that the letterbox slams when she lets go of it. She holds her breath and feels her heart thumping in her whole head. But then she remembers Granny saying that this needs to be done quickly so Brit Marie doesn't get suspicious during the residence meeting downstairs. Brit Marie really hates our friend. Elsa tries to remind herself that in spite of it all, she is a knight of Miamis, and after that she opens the letterbox with more courage. She hears its breath. It sounds like there's a rockfall going on in its lungs. Elsa's heart thumps until she's sure our friend will feel the vibrations through the door.
My granny sends her regards and apologizes for not bringing you any sweets for such a long time,
she says diligently through the letterbox, removing fistfuls of wrappers and dropping them on the floor. Then she hears it moving and snatches back her hand, startled. There's a silence for a few seconds. She hears the abrupt crunch of our friend taking the chocolate in its jaws.
"Granny's ill,"
Elsa explains while it's eating. She isn't prepared for the way the words tremble as they come out of her. She convinces herself that our friend is breathing more slowly. She empties in more chocolate.
"She has cancer," whispers Elsa.
Elsa has no friends, so she isn't quite sure of the normal procedure for these types of errands. But she imagines that if she did have friends, she'd want them to know if she had cancer.
"She sends her best and says sorry,"
she whispers into the darkness and drops in the rest of the chocolate and gently closes the letterbox. She stays there for a moment, looking at our friend's door, and then at the monsters. If this wild animal can be hiding behind one of the doors, she doesn't even want to know what might be behind the other. Then she jogs down the stairs to the front entrance. George is still in the laundry. In the meeting room, they're all drinking coffee and arguing. Because it's a normal house, by and large. Chapter 4. Beer. The room in the hospital smells as bad and feels as cold as hospital rooms tend to when it is 2 degrees above zero outside, and someone has hidden beer bottles under their pillow and opened a window to try to get rid of the smell of cigarette smoke. It hasn't worked. Granny and Elsa are playing Monopoly. Granny doesn't say anything about cancer, for Elsa's sake. And Elsa doesn't say anything about death, for Granny's sake. Because Granny doesn't like talking about death, especially not her own. So when Elsa's mum and the doctors leave the room to talk in low, serious voices in the corridor, Elsa tries not to look worried. That doesn't really work either. Granny grins secretively.
Did I ever tell you about the time I fixed a job for the dragons in Miamis?
She asks in their secret language. It's good to have a secret language in hospital, because hospitals have ears in their walls, says Granny. Especially when the walls have Elsa's mum as their boss.
Duh, obviously.
Granny nods as a courtesy and tells the whole story anyway, because no one ever taught Granny how not to tell a story. And Elsa listens because no one ever taught her how not to. That's why she knows that one of the things people say about Granny most often when she's not around is, this time she's really crossed the line. Britt Marie is always saying it. Elsa assumes this is why Granny likes the Kingdom of Miamis so much. You can't cross the line in Miamis, because the kingdom is endless. And not like on television when people toss their hair about and say that they have no boundaries, but properly without any limits, because no one knows for certain where Miamis begins and ends. This is partly because unlike the other 5 kingdoms in the Land of Almost Awake, which are mainly built of stone and mortar, Miamis is wholly made of imagination. It could also be slightly because the Miamis city wall has an insanely irascible temperament and may suddenly one morning have the idea of moving itself a couple of kilometres into the forest because it needs a bit of me time, only to move twice as far back in the opposite direction the next morning because it has decided to wall in some dragon or troll that for one reason or another it has decided to be grumpy with. Usually because the dragon or the troll has been up all night drinking schnapps and weeing on the wall while sleeping, Granny suggests. There are more trolls and dragons in Miamis than in any other of the 5 kingdoms in the Land of Almost Awake, you see, because the main export industry in Miamis is fairy tales. Trolls and dragons have excellent employment prospects in Miamis because stories need villains.
Of course, it hasn't always been like this. Granny sometimes muses. There was a time when the dragons had been almost forgotten by Miamis storytellers, particularly the ones who'd grown a little long in the tooth.
Then she recounts the whole story about how the dragons were causing too much trouble in Miamis, drifting about without jobs, drinking schnapps and smoking cigars and getting involved in violent confrontations with the city wall. So in the end, the people of Miamis begged Granny to help them come up with some kind of practical job creation scheme. And that's when Granny had the idea that dragons should guard treasures at the end of the tales. Up until that point, it had actually been a massive narrative problem. The fact that heroes in fairy tales looked for a treasure and once they had located it in some deep cave, only had to nip inside to pick it up. Just like that. No epic closing battles or dramatic apexes or anything.
All you could do was play worthless video games afterwards, Granny said, nodding somberly.
Granny knows all about it because last summer Elsa taught her how to play a game called World of Warcraft, and Granny played it round the clock for several weeks until Mum said she was beginning to exhibit disturbing tendencies and banned her from sleeping in Elsa's room from then on. But anyway, when the storytellers heard Granny's idea, the whole problem was solved in an afternoon.
And that's why all fairy tales nowadays have dragons at the end. It's my doing, Granny chortles,
like she always does. Granny has a story from Miamis for every situation. One of them is about Miplorus, the kingdom where all sorrow is kept in storage, and its princess, who was robbed of a magical treasure by an ugly witch, who she's been hunting ever since. Another story is about two princeling brothers, both in love with the princess of Miploris, practically breaking the land of Almost Awake into pieces in their furious battle for her love. One story was about the sea angel, weighed down by a curse that forced her to drift up and down the coast of the land of Almost Awake after losing her beloved. And another story was about the Chosen One, the most universally loved dancer in Mimovas, which is the kingdom where all music comes from. In the fairy tale, the shadows tried to abduct the Chosen One in order to destroy Mimovas, but the cloud animals saved him and flew him all the way back to Miamis. And when the shadows came after them, all the inhabitants of the six kingdoms of the land of Almost Awake, the princes, princesses, knights, soldiers, trolls, angels, and the witch, agreed to protect the Chosen One. And that was when the war without end started. It raged for an eternity of 10,000 fairy tales, until the Wursas and Wolfheart came out of the forest and led the good army into the last battle and forced the shadows back across the sea. Of course, Wolfheart is a whole fairy tale in his own right, because he was born in Miamis, but just like all other soldiers, he grew up in Mibatalos. He has a warrior's heart, but the soul of a storyteller, and he's the most invincible fighter ever seen in any of the six kingdoms. He had been living deep in the dark forests for many eternities of fairy tales, but he came back when the land of Almost Awake needed him most. Granny has been telling these fairy tales for as long as Elsa can remember. In the beginning, they were only to make Elsa go to sleep, and to get her to practice Granny's secret language, and a little because Granny is just about as nutty as one should be. But lately the stories have another dimension as well. Something Elsa can't quite put her finger on.
"Put Marylebone Station back," says Elsa tersely.
"I bought it," Granny tries.
"Sure you did. Put it back."
"This is how it must have been playing bloody Monopoly with Hitler."
"Hitler would only have wanted to play Risk," mutters Elsa, because she's checked out Hitler on Wikipedia after there were some rows between her and Granny about her use of Hitler as a metaphor.
"Touché," mutters Granny.
And then they play in silence for about a minute, because that is about the usual length of time they can be bothered to keep feuding.
"Did you give the chocolate to our friend?" asks Granny.
Elsa nods, but she doesn't mention how she told it about Granny's cancer. A little bit because she thinks Granny would be annoyed, and quite a bit because she doesn't want to talk about cancer. She checked it on Wikipedia yesterday, and then she checked what a will is, and then she was so angry that she couldn't sleep all night.
"How did you and our friend become friends?" she asks instead.
Granny shrugs.
"The usual way."
Elsa doesn't know what the usual way is because she has no other friends than Granny, but she doesn't say anything because she knows Granny would be upset if she heard that.
"Anyway, the mission is done,"
she says in a low voice. Granny nods keenly and throws a searching look at the door, as if concerned someone could be watching them. Then she reaches under her pillow. The bottles clink against each other, and she swears when she spills some beer on the pillowcase, but then she hauls out an envelope and presses it into Elsa's hand.
"This is your next mission, my knight, Elsa, but you mustn't open it until tomorrow."
Elsa looks at the envelope skeptically. "Haven't you heard of email?"
"You can't email something this important."
Elsa weighs the envelope in her hand, presses the lumpy bit at the bottom of it.
"What is it?"
"A letter." "And a key," says Granny.
And then she looks both serious and frightened, both of which are very rare emotions in Granny. She reaches out and grabs hold of Elsa's index fingers.
"Tomorrow, I'm going to send you out on the biggest treasure hunt you've ever seen, my brave little knight. Are you ready for that?"
Granny has always loved treasure hunts. In Miamis, treasure hunting is considered a sport. You can compete in it because it's an approved Olympic field event, But in Miamis, it's not called the Olympic Games. It's actually known as the Invisible Games because all the participants are invisible. Not exactly a spectator sport, as Elsa pointed out when Granny told her about it. Elsa also loves treasure hunts, but not as much as Granny. No one in any kingdom in the eternity of 10,000 fairy tales could love them like she does. She can make anything into a treasure hunt. If they've been out shopping and Granny can't remember where she parked Renault, or when she wants Elsa to go through her mail and pay her bills because Granny finds this insanely boring, or when there's a sports day at school and Elsa knows the older children are going to lash her in the shower with rolled-up towels, Granny can make a parking area into magic mountains and rolled-up towels into dragons that must be outsmarted, and Elsa is always the heroine. This sounds like a different kind of treasure hunt altogether, though. The one who's supposed to have the key will know what to do with it. You have to protect the castle, Elsa. Granny has always called their house the castle. Elsa always just thought it was because she's a bit nutty, but now she's not so sure. Protect the castle, Elsa. Protect your family. Protect your friends, Granny repeats determinedly. What friends? Granny puts her hands against Elsa's cheeks and smiles. They'll come. Tomorrow I am sending you out on a treasure hunt, and it's going to be a fairy tale of marvels and a grand adventure, and you have to promise not to hate me for it. Elsa blinks, and there's a burning sensation. Why would I hate you? Granny caresses her eyelids. It's a grandmother's prerogative never to have to show her worst sides to her grandchild, Elsa. Never to have to talk about what she was like before she became a grandmother. I know loads of your worst sides. She's hoping to make Granny laugh with that one, but it doesn't work. Granny just whispers in a sad voice. It's going to be a grand adventure and a fairy tale of marvels. But it's my fault that you'll find a dragon at the end, my darling knight. Elsa squints at her because she has never heard Granny talking like this. She always claims credit for the dragons at the end. It's never her fault. Granny sits before her, tinier and more fragile than Elsa can remember ever having seen her. Not at all like a superhero. Granny kisses her forehead. Promise you won't hate me when you find out who I've been. And promise me you'll protect the castle. Protect your friends. Elsa doesn't know what any of this means, but she promises. And then Granny embraces her for longer than ever before. Give the letter to him who's waiting. He won't want to accept it, but tell him it's from me. Tell him your granny sends her regards and apologizes. And then she wipes the tears from Elsa's cheeks. And Elsa points out that you're supposed to say to he who's waiting, not him. And they argue a bit about that, as usual. And then they play Monopoly and eat cinnamon buns and talk about who'd win a fight between Harry Potter and Spider-Man. Bloody pathetic discussion, of course. Thinks Elsa. But Granny likes nattering on about these types of things because she's too immature to understand that Harry Potter would have crushed Spider-Man. Granny gets out some more cinnamon buns from large paper bags under another pillow. Not that she has to hide the cinnamon buns from Elsa's mum the way she has to hide the beer from Elsa's mum, but she likes keeping them together because she likes eating them together. Beer and cinnamon buns is Granny's favourite snack. Elsa recognizes the name of the bakery on the bags. Granny only eats cinnamon buns from that one bakery because she says no one else knows how to make real Mireva's cinnamon buns. In fact, it's the national dish of the land of Almost Awake. One very bad thing about it is that one can only have the national dish on the national day, but a very good thing about it is that in the land of Almost Awake, every day is the national day. As Granny likes to put it, in the end, the problem disappears, said the old lady who crapped in the sink. Elsa hopes with all her might that this doesn't mean Granny is going to start using the kitchen sink with the door left open. Are you really going to get well? Elsa asks, with the reluctance of an almost 8-year-old, asking a question to which she already knows she doesn't want to know the answer.
"Course I will,"
Granny says with complete confidence, although she can see well enough that Elsa knows she's lying. "Promise," Elsa insists. And then Granny leans forward and whispers into her ear in their secret language.
"I promise, my beloved, beloved knight, I promise that it will get better. I promise that everything will be fine."
Because that is what Granny always says, that it will get better, that everything will be fine.
"But I still think that Spider-Man fellow would have wiped the floor with this Harry,"
Granny adds with a grin. And in the end, Elsa grins back at her. They eat more cinnamon buns and play more Monopoly, and this makes it much more difficult to stay grumpy. The sun goes down, everything goes silent. Elsa lies very close to Granny in the narrow hospital bed, and they mainly just close their eyes and the cloud animals come to fetch them, and they go to Miami's together. And in an apartment block on the other side of town, everyone wakes up with a start when the hound, in the first floor flat, without any early warning, starts howling, louder and more heart-rending than anything they have ever heard coming out of the primal depths of any animal, as if it was singing with the sorrow and yearning of an eternity of 10,000 fairy tales. It howls for hours all through the night until dawn, and by the time the morning light seeps into the hospital room, Elsa wakes up in Granny's arms. But Granny is still in Miami's. Chapter 5. Lilies. Having a grandmother is like having an army. This is a grandchild's ultimate privilege. Knowing that someone is on your side, always, whatever the details, even when you are wrong. Especially then, in fact. A grandmother is both a sword and a shield. When they say at school that Elsa is different, as if this was something bad, or when she comes home with bruises and the headmaster says, she has to learn to fit in, this is when Granny backs her up, won't let her apologize, refuses to let her take the blame. Granny never says to Elsa that she shouldn't let it get to her because then they won't enjoy teasing you as much, or that she should just walk away. Granny knows better than that. And the lonelier Elsa gets in the real world, the larger her army in the land of almost awake. The harder the lashes of rolled-up towels in the day, the more astounding the adventures she gets to ride into in the nights. In Miami's, no one says she has to learn to fit in. That's why Elsa wasn't especially impressed when Dad took her to that hotel in Spain and explained that it was all-inclusive there. Because if you have a granny, your whole life is all-inclusive. Her teachers at school say that Elsa is having concentration issues. But it isn't true. She can recite more or less all of Harry Potter by memory. She can outline the exact superpowers of all the X-Men and knows exactly which of them Spider-Man could and could not take out in a fight. And she can draw a fairly okay version of the map at the start of The Lord of the Rings with her eyes closed. Unless Granny is standing next to her, tugging at the paper and moaning about how this is insanely boring and how she'd rather take Renault out and do something. She's a bit restless, Granny, but she has shown Elsa every corner of Miami's and all the corners of the other 5 kingdoms in the land of almost awake. Even the ruins of Mybatalos, which was sacked by the shadows at the end of the war without end. Elsa has stood with Granny on the rocks by the coast, where the 99 snow angels sacrifice themselves. She has looked out over the sea, where one day the shadows will come back. And she knows all about the shadows, because Granny always says, one should know one's enemies better than oneself. The shadows were dragons in the beginning, but they had an evil and a darkness of such strength within themselves that it made them into something else, something much more dangerous. They hate people and their stories. They have hated for so long and with such intensity that in the end the darkness enveloped their whole bodies until their shapes were no longer discernible. That is also why they are so difficult to defeat, because they can disappear into walls or into the ground or float up. They're ferocious and bloodthirsty, and if you're bitten by one, you don't just die. A far more serious and terrible fate lies in store. You lose your imagination. It just runs out of your wound and leaves you grey and empty. You wither away year by year until your body is just a shell, until no one remembers any fairy tales anymore. And without fairy tales, Miamis and the whole land of Almost Awake die a death without imagination, the most repellent kind of death. But Wolfheart defeated the shadows in the war without end. He came out of the forests when the fairy tales needed him most and drove the shadows into the sea. And one day the shadows will come back. And maybe that is why Granny tells her all the stories now, thinks Elsa, to prepare her. So the teachers are wrong. Elsa has no problems concentrating. She just concentrates on the right things. Granny says people who think slowly always accuse quick thinkers of concentration problems. Idiots can't understand that non-idiots are done with a thought and already moving on to the next before they have. That's why idiots are always so scared and aggressive, because nothing scares idiots more than a smart girl. That is what she often says to Elsa when Elsa has had a particularly concentration-challenged day at school. And they lie on Granny's gigantic bed, under all the black and white photographs on Granny's ceiling, and close their eyes until the people in the photographs start dancing. Elsa doesn't know who they are. Granny just calls them her stars, because when the street light comes through the blinds, they glitter like the sky at night. Men in uniforms stand there, and other men in doctor's coats, and a few men with hardly any clothes on at all. Tall men, and smiling men, and men with moustaches, and four square men wearing hats. And they all stand next to Granny, and they look as if she just told them a cheeky joke. None of them are looking into the camera, because none of them can tear their eyes away from her. Granny is young. She is beautiful and immortal. She stands by road signs whose letters Elsa can't read. She stands outside tents in deserts between men with rifles in their hands. And everywhere in the photos are children. Some of them have bandages round their heads, and some lie in hospital beds with tubes inserted into their bodies. And one of them only has one arm and a stump where the other arm should have been. But one of the boys hardly looks hurt at all. He looks like he could run 100 kilometers in his bare feet. He's about the same age as Elsa, and his hair is so thick and tangled that you could lose your keys in it. And there's something in his eyes, as if he just found a secret stash of fireworks and ice cream. His eyes are big and perfectly round and so black that the surrounding white is like chalk on a blackboard. Elsa doesn't know who he is, but she calls him the werewolf boy, because that is what he looks like to her. She always thinks about asking Granny more about the werewolf boy, but the minute the thought occurs to her, her eyelids start drooping, and in the next moment she's sitting on a cloud animal, and Granny is next to her, on hers, and they're gliding over the land of Almost Awake, and landing by the city gates of Miamis. And then Elsa thinks that she'll ask Granny in the morning. And then one morning. There is no morning anymore. Elsa is sitting on the bench outside the big window. She's so cold that her teeth are chattering. Her mum is inside talking to the woman who sounds like a whale, or at least the way Elsa imagines a whale would sound, which is difficult to know, admittedly, when you've never happened to run into a whale. But she sounds like Granny's gramophone player after Granny tried to build a robot out of it. It was slightly unclear what sort of robot she was intending to build, but whatever the case, it wasn't a very good one. And then the gramophone sounded like a whale after that, whenever you tried to play a record on it. Elsa learned all about LPs and CDs that afternoon. That was when she worked out why old people seemed to have so much free time, because in the olden days, until Spotify came along, they must have used up almost all their time just changing the track. She tightens her coat collar and her Gryffindor scarf round her chin. The first snow came in the night, gradually, almost reluctantly. Now it's so deep you can make snow angels. Elsa loves doing that. In Miamis, there are snow angels all year round. But as Granny constantly reminds Elsa, they are not especially polite. They're quite arrogant and self-important, in fact, and always complain about the service when they're eating out at one of the inns.
There's a right carry-on, smelling the wine and all that crap, snorts Granny.
She holds out her foot and catches the snowflakes on her shoe. She hates sitting on benches outside waiting for Mum, but she still does it because the only thing Elsa hates more is sitting inside waiting for Mum. She wants to go home. With Granny. It's as if the whole house is missing Granny now. Not the people living in it, but the actual building. The walls are creaking and whining. And our friend has been howling without pause in its flat for 2 whole nights. Britt Marie forced Kent to ring the doorbell of our friend's flat, but no one answered. It just barked so loudly that Kent stumbled into a wall. So Britt Marie called the police. She has hated our friend for a long time. A couple of months ago, she went round the house with a petition to get everyone to sign it so she could send it to the landlord and demand the eviction of that horrendous hound. We can't have dogs in the leaseholders' association. It's a question of safety. It's dangerous for the children, and one must think of the children. Britt Marie explained this to everyone in the manner of someone who is concerned about children, although the only children in the house are Elsa and the boy with the syndrome. And Elsa is pretty sure that Britt Marie is not massively worried about Elsa's safety. The boy with the syndrome lives opposite the terrifying dog, but his mother light-heartedly told Britt Marie she believed the hound was more bothered by her son than the other way round. Granny couldn't stop herself laughing when she heard this, but it made Elsa worry about Britt Marie trying to prohibit children as well. Elsa jumps off the bench and starts traipsing around in the snow to warm up her feet. Next to the big window where the whale woman is working, there's a supermarket with a sign outside. Mince beef, $49.90. Elsa tries to control herself because her mum is always telling her to control herself, but in the end she gets out her red felt-tip pen from her jacket pocket and adds a neat D and a slash to show that it should be 2 words. She looks at the result and nods slightly. Then puts the pen back in her pocket and sits down again on the bench. Leans her head back and closes her eyes and feels the cold little feet of the snowflakes landing on her face. When the smell of smoke reaches her nostrils, she thinks she's imagining it. At first, it's even wonderful to feel that acrid smell at the back of her throat, and though Elsa can't think why, it makes her feel warm and secure. But then she feels something else, something thumping behind her ribs. Like a warning signal. The man is standing a distance away, in the shadow of one of the high-rise blocks. She can't see him clearly, only pick out the red glow of his cigarette between his fingers and the fact that he's very thin, as if he's lacking in contours. He stands partially turned away from her, as if he hasn't even seen her. And Elsa doesn't know why she gets so scared, but she finds herself fumbling around the bench for a weapon. It's very odd. She never does that in the real world. In the real world, her first instinct is always to run. Only in Miamis would she reach for her sword, like a knight does when sensing danger. But there are no swords here. When she looks up again, the man is still turned away from her, but she could swear that he's moved closer, and he's still in the shade, although he's moved away from the high-rise. As if the shadow isn't cast by the house, but by the man himself. Elsa blinks, and when she opens her eyes, she no longer thinks the man has moved closer. She knows he has. She slips off the bench and reverses towards the big window, fumbling for the door handle. Stumbles inside, stands there panting, gasping, trying to calm down. Only when the door closes behind her with a little friendly pling does she understand what she found reassuring about the cigarette smoke. The man smokes the same tobacco as Granny. Elsa would recognize it anywhere because Granny used to let her help out with the cigarette rolling. Because Granny says that Elsa has such small fingers and they're perfect for these little sods. When she looks out of the window, she no longer knows where the shadows begin and end. One moment she imagines the man is still standing there on the other side of the street, but then she starts wondering if she actually saw him at all. She jumps like a startled animal when Mum's hands alight on her shoulders. She spins round with wide-open eyes before her legs give way. Tiredness disarms all her senses once she's in her mother's arms. She's not slept for 2 days. Mum's distended belly is big enough to rest a teacup on. George says it is nature's way of giving a pregnant woman a break. Let's go home, Mum whispers softly in her ear. Elsa stares, forcing her tiredness away and sliding out of her grip.
First, I want to talk to Granny.
Mum looks devastated. Elsa knows that because devastated is a word for the word jar. We'll get to the word jar later in this story.
It's... Darling, I don't know if it's a good idea, whispers Mum.
But Elsa has already run past the reception desk and into the next room. She can hear the whale woman yelling behind her, but then she hears her mother's composed voice asking her to let Elsa go inside. Granny is waiting for her in the middle of the room. There's a fragrance of lilies, Mum's favourite flower. Granny doesn't have any favourite flowers because no plant lives for longer than 24 hours in Granny's flat, and in a fairly rare instance of compliance, possibly also because of the enthusiastic encouragement of her favourite grandchild, Granny has decided it would be bloody unfair to nature for her to have any favourite flowers. Elsa stands to one side with her hands pushed moodily into her jacket pockets. Defiantly, she stamps snow from her shoes onto the floor.
I don't want to be a part of this treasure hunt. It's idiotic!
Granny doesn't answer. She never answers when she knows that Elsa is right. Elsa stamps more snow off her shoes.
You are idiotic, she says, cuttingly.
Granny doesn't rise to that one either. Elsa sits on the chair next to her and holds out the letter.
You can take care of this idiotic letter yourself, she whispers.
2 days have gone by since our friend started howling. 2 days since Elsa was last in the land of Almost Awake and the kingdom of Miamis. No one is being straight with her. All the grown-ups try to wrap it in cotton wool, so it doesn't sound dangerous or frightening or unpleasant. As if Granny hasn't been ill. As if the whole thing was an accident. But Elsa knows they're lying, because Elsa's Granny hasn't ever been laid low by an accident. Usually it's the accident that gets laid low by Granny. And Elsa knows what cancer is. It says all about it on Wikipedia. She gives the edge of the coffin a shove to get a reaction, because deep down she's still hoping this could be one of those occasions when Granny is just pulling her leg. Like that time Granny dressed the snowman so he looked like a real person who'd fallen from the balcony, and Britt Marie got so furious when she realised it was a joke that she called the police. And the next morning when Britt Marie looked out of the window, she discovered that Granny had made another identical snowman, and then Britt Marie went loopy, as Granny put it, and came charging out with a snow shovel. And then the snowman jumped up and roared, "Wah!" Granny told her afterwards that she'd lain in the snow for hours, waiting for Britt Marie, and at least 2 cats had weed on her in the meantime.
But it was well worth it!
Britt Marie called the police again, of course, but they said it wasn't a crime to scare someone. This time, though, Granny doesn't get up. Elsa bangs her fists against the coffin, but Granny doesn't answer. And Elsa bangs harder and harder, as if it's possible to put right all the things that are wrong by banging. In the end, she slips off the chair and sinks onto her knees on the floor and whispers,
"Do you know that they're lying? They say you've passed away, or that we've lost you. No one says dead."
Elsa digs her nails into her palms and her whole body trembles.
"I don't know how to get to Miamis if you're dead."
Granny doesn't answer. Elsa puts her forehead against the lower edge of the coffin. She feels the cold wood against her skin and warm tears on her lips. Then she feels Mum's soft fingers against her neck and she turns round and throws her arms round her, and Mum carries her out of there. When she opens her eyes again, she's sitting in Kia, Mum's car. Mum is standing outside in the snow talking to George on the telephone. Elsa knows she doesn't want her to hear them talking about the funeral. She's not an idiot. She's still got Granny's letter in her hand, She knows you're not supposed to read other people's letters, but she must have read this one 100 times these last 2 days. Granny must have known she'd do this, because she's written the entire letter in symbols that Elsa can't understand, using the strange alphabet she saw on the road signs in Granny's photographs. Elsa glares at it. Granny always said she and Elsa shouldn't have any secrets from each other, only secrets together. She's furious with Granny for the lie, because now Elsa sits here with the greatest secret of them all, and she can't understand a crapping thing. And she knows that if she falls out with Granny at this point, it will set a personal record that they can never beat. The ink smudges over the paper when she blinks down at it. Although there are letters that Elsa doesn't know, Granny has probably misspelled things. When Granny writes, it's as if she's just scattering words over the page while she's already mentally on her way somewhere else. It's not that Granny can't spell, it's just that she thinks so fast that the letters and words can't keep up. And unlike Elsa, Granny can't see the point of spelling things correctly. Anyway, she was always better at science and numbers. "You bloody understand what I mean," she hisses when she passes Elsa's secret notes while they're eating with Mum and George. And Elsa adds the dashes and spaces in the right places with her red felt-tip pen. It's one of the few things they really row about, Granny and Elsa, because Elsa thinks letters are something more than just a way of sending messages, something more important. Or used to. They used to row about it. There's only one word in the whole letter that Elsa can read. Just one, which has been written in normal letters, tossed down almost haphazardly in the middle of the text. It's so anonymous that Elsa didn't notice it the first time she read it. She reads it again and again until she can't see it through all her blinking. She feels let down and angry for tens of thousands of reasons, and probably another 10,000 she hasn't even thought of yet, because she knows it's not a coincidence. Granny put that word right there so Elsa would see it. The name on the envelope is the same name as the one on the monster's letterbox. And the only word Elsa can read in the letter is Miamis. Granny has always loved treasure hunts. Chapter 6. Cleaning Agents. She has 3 scratch marks on her cheek, as if from claws. She knows they'll want to know how it all began. Elsa ran, is the short answer. She's good at running. That's what happens when you get chased all the time. This morning she lied to Mum about starting school an hour earlier than usual. And when Mum pulled her up on it, Elsa played the bad mother card. The bad mother card is like Renault. Hardly a beauty, but surprisingly effective.
I've told you like 100 times I start earlier on Mondays. I even gave you a slip, but you never listen to me anymore.
Mum mumbled something about pregnant airhead and looked guilty. The easiest way of getting her on the back foot is if you can manage to convince her she's lost control. There used to be just 2 people in the world who knew how to make Mum lose control. And now there's only one. That's a lot of power to put into the hands of someone who's not even 8 yet. At lunchtime, Elsa took the bus home, as she figured she had a better chance of dodging Brit Marie during the day. She stopped and bought 4 bags of dime in the supermarket. The house was as dark and silent as only Granny's house could be without the presence of Granny, and it felt as if even the house was missing her. Elsa hid carefully from Brit Marie, who was on her way to the space where the bins are kept, although she didn't even have any bags of separated rubbish. After Brit Marie had checked the contents of all the bins and pursed her mouth the way she does when she decides to raise some issue at the next residence meeting, she set off down the street to the supermarket so she could walk about and purse her mouth in there for a while. Elsa sneaked in and went up the stairs to the mezzanine floor. There she stood, shaking with fear and anger outside the flat, still with the letter in her hand. Her anger was reserved for Granny. Her fear was of the monster. Not long after, she was running through the playground so fast she thought her feet were on fire. And now she sits in a small room with luminous red scratch marks on her cheek, waiting for Mum and fully aware that they'll demand to know what's happened. She spins the globe at one end of the desk. The headmaster looks particularly vexed about it, so she keeps doing it.
Well?
The headmaster asks, pointing at her cheek.
Are you ready to tell me what happened?
She doesn't even grace him with an answer. It was smart of Granny, Elsa has to admit it. She's still insanely irritated about this stupid treasure hunt, but it was smart of Granny to write Miamis in normal characters in the letter. Because Elsa had stood there earlier on the landing, summoning her courage for at least 100 eternities before she rang the doorbell. And if Granny hadn't known that Elsa would read the letter even though one mustn't read other people's letters, and if she hadn't written Miamis in normal characters, Elsa would just have thrown the envelope in the monster's letterbox and run away. Instead, she stood there ringing the doorbell because she had to press the monster for some answers. Because Miamis belonged to Granny and Elsa, it's only theirs. Elsa's fury at the thought of Granny bringing along some random Muppet was bigger than any fear she might have of monsters. Okay, not much bigger than her monster fear, but big enough. Our friend was still howling in the flat next door, but nothing happened when she rang the monster's doorbell. She rang again and banged the door until the wood was creaking and then peered inside through the letterbox, but it was too dark to see anything. Not a movement. Not a breath. All she could feel was an acrid smell of cleaning agents, the sort of smell that rushes up your nasal membranes and starts kicking the back of your eyeballs when you breathe it in. But no sign of a monster, not even a little one. Elsa took off her backpack and got out the 4 bags of dime and emptied them through our friend's letterbox. For a few brief moments, the creature stopped howling in there. Elsa had decided to call it the creature until she had figured out what it really was, because irrespective of what Brit Marie says, Elsa is pretty damn sure that this is no mere dog.
You have to stop howling. Brit Marie will call the police and they'll come here and kill you, she whispered through the letterbox.
She didn't know if the creature understood, but at least it was being quiet and eating its dime, as any rational creature does when offered dime.
If you see the monster, tell him. I have post for him, said Elsa.
The creature didn't answer, but Elsa felt its warm breath when it sniffed at the door.
Tell him. My granny sends her regards and apologizes, she whispered.
And then she put the letter in her backpack and took the bus back to school. And when she looked out of the bus window, she thought she saw him again. The thin man who'd been standing outside the undertaker's yesterday while Mum was talking to the whale woman. Now, he was in the shadows on the other side of the street. She couldn't see his face behind the cigarette smoke, but a cold instinctual terror wrapped itself round her ribs. And then he was gone. Elsa reckons this may have been why she couldn't make herself invisible when she got to school. Invisibility is the sort of superpower you can train yourself to have, and Elsa practices it all the time. But it doesn't work if you are angry or frightened. When she got to school, Elsa was both. Afraid of men turning up in the shadows without her knowing why, and angry at Granny for sending a letter to a monster, and both angry at and afraid of monsters. Normal monsters have the decency to live deep inside black caves or at the bottom of ice-cold lakes. Normal, terrifying monsters don't actually live in flats and get their post delivered. And anyway, Elsa hates Monday. School is always at its worst on Monday mornings, because people who like chasing you have had to hang about all weekend with no one to chase. The notes in her locker are always the worst on Mondays. Which could also be why the invisibility thing is not working. Elsa starts fidgeting with the headmaster's globe again. Then she hears the door opening behind her, and the headmaster stands up, looking relieved.
Hello, sorry I'm so late, it's the traffic.
Elsa's mum pants out of breath, and Elsa feels her fingers brushing her neck. Elsa doesn't turn round. She also feels mum's telephone brushing against her neck because mum always carries it. As if she was a cyborg and it was a part of her organic tissue. Elsa fingers the globe a little more demonstratively. The headmaster sits down in his chair, then leans forward and discreetly tries to move the globe out of her reach. He turns, hopefully, to Mum.
Shall we wait for Elsa's father, perhaps? The headmaster prefers Dad to be present at these types of meetings because he seems to find Dads easier to reason with when it comes to this sort of thing. Mum doesn't look especially pleased. Elsa's father is away, and unfortunately he won't be back until tomorrow. The headmaster looks disappointed.
Of course, there's no intention on our part to create a sense of panic here, especially not in your condition.
He nods at Mum's belly. Mum looks like she needs to control herself quite a lot not to ask exactly what he's driving at. The headmaster clears his throat and pulls the globe even further from Elsa's reaching fingers. He looks as if he's going to impress on Mum that she should think of the child, which is what people try to impress on Mum when they're nervous that she may get angry.
Think about the child.
They used to mean Elsa when they said that, but now they mean Halfie. Elsa straightens her leg and kicks the waste paper basket. She can hear the headmaster and Mum talking, but she doesn't listen. Deep inside, she's hoping Granny will come storming in at any moment with her fists raised like in a boxing match in an old film. The last time Elsa was called in to see the headmaster, he only called Mum and Dad, but Granny came along all the same. Granny was not the sort of person you had to call. Elsa had sat there spinning the headmaster's globe on that occasion too. The boy who'd given her a black eye had been there with his parents. The headmaster had turned to Elsa's father and said, "There's an element of a typical boyish prank about this." And then he had to devote quite a long time to explaining to Granny what a typical girlish prank might be, because Granny really wanted to know. The headmaster had tried to calm Granny by telling the boy who'd given Elsa the black eye that only cowards hit girls, but Granny was not the least bit calmed by that.
"It's not bloody cowardly to hit girls," she had roared at the headmaster. "This kid isn't a little arsewipe for hitting a girl. He's an arsewipe for hitting anyone."
And then the boy's father got upset and started being rude to Granny for calling his son an arsewipe. And then Granny had replied that she was going to teach Elsa how to kick boys on the fuse box. And then they'd see how much bloody fun it was fighting with girls. And then the headmaster had asked everyone to compose themselves a little. And then they all tried that for a bit. But then the headmaster wanted the boy and Elsa to shake hands and apologize to each other. And then Granny sprang out of her chair asking, "Why the hell should Elsa apologize?" The headmaster said that Elsa must take her share of the guilt because she had provoked the boy. And one had to understand that the boy had experienced difficulties in controlling himself. And that was when Granny had tried to throw the globe at the headmaster. But Mum managed to catch hold of Granny's arm at the very last moment, so that the globe ended up hitting the headmaster's computer instead and smashing the screen.
"I was provoked,"
Granny had roared at the headmaster while Mum tried to drag her into the corridor.
"I couldn't control myself."
That's why Elsa always tore up the notes she got in her locker. The notes about how she is ugly, that she's disgusting, that they're going to kill her. Elsa ripped them into such tiny pieces that they could hardly be seen, and then threw them into different waste paper bins all over the school. It was an act of mercy to those who wrote the notes because Granny would have beaten them to death if she'd found out. Elsa rises slightly from the chair and quickly reaches across the desk to give the globe another spin. The headmaster looks close to despair. Elsa sinks back into her chair, satisfied.
"My God, Elsa, what happened to your cheek?"
Mum bursts out, with exclamation marks at the end, when she sees the three red lacerations. Elsa shrugs without answering. Mum turns to the headmaster. Her eyes are burning.
"What happened to her cheek?"
The headmaster twists in his seat.
"Now then, let's calm ourselves down. Now think about your child."
He isn't pointing at Elsa when he says that last bit. He's pointing at Mum. Elsa stretches her leg and kicks the waste paper bin again. Mum takes a deep breath and closes her eyes, then determinedly moves the waste paper bin further under the desk. Elsa looks at her, offended, sinks so deep into the chair that she has to hold onto the armrests to stop herself sliding out, and reaches out with her leg until her toe almost touches the rim of the waste paper bin. Mum sighs. Elsa sighs even louder. The headmaster looks at them, and then at the globe on his desk. He pulls it closer towards him.
"So,"
he begins at last, smiling half-heartedly at Mum. It's been a difficult week for the whole family. Mum interrupts him at once and sounds as if she's trying to apologize. Elsa hates it.
We can all empathize with that, says the headmaster in the manner of someone who doesn't know the meaning of the word.
He looks nervously at the globe.
Unfortunately, it's not the first time Elsa has found herself in conflict at this school.
Not the last, neither, Elsa mutters. Elsa, snaps Mum.
Mum!
Elsa roars with 3 exclamation marks. Mum sighs. Elsa sighs even louder. The headmaster clears his throat and holds the globe with both hands as he says,
We, and by that I mean the staff at this school, obviously in collaboration with the welfare officer, feel that Elsa could be helped by a psychologist to channel her aggressions.
A psychologist, says Mum, hesitantly. Surely that's a bit dramatic. The headmaster raises his hands defensively as if apologizing, or possibly as if he's about to start playing an air tambourine.
It's not that we think anything is wrong, absolutely not. Lots of special needs children benefit from therapy. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Elsa reaches out with the tips of her toes and pushes over the waste paper basket.
Why don't you go to a psychologist yourself?
The headmaster decides to make the globe safe by putting it on the floor next to his chair. Mum leans towards Elsa and exerts herself incredibly not to raise her voice.
If you tell me, and the headmaster, which of the children are causing you trouble, we can help you solve the conflicts instead of things always ending up like this, darling.
Elsa looks up, her lips pressed into a straight line. The scratch marks on her cheek have stopped bleeding, but they are still as bright as neon lights.
Snitches get stitches, she says succinctly.
Elsa, please try to cooperate, the headmaster says, attempting a grimace that Elsa assumes to be his way of smiling a little.
Why don't you cooperate yourself,
Elsa replies without an attempt to smile, even a little. The headmaster looks at Mum.
The school staff and I believe that if Elsa could just try to walk away sometimes when she feels there's a conflict about to happen.
Elsa doesn't wait for Mum's answer because she knows Mum won't defend her, so she snatches up her backpack from the floor and stands up.
Can we go now or what?
And then the headmaster says she can go into the corridor. He sounds relieved. Elsa marches out while Mum stays in there, apologizing. Elsa hates it. She just wants to go home so it won't be Monday anymore. During the last lesson before lunch, one of their smarmy teachers told them their assignment over the Christmas holiday would be to prepare a talk on the theme of a literary hero I look up to. And they were to dress up as their hero and talk about the hero in the first person singular. Everyone had to put up their hands and choose a hero. Elsa was going to go for Harry Potter. But someone else got him first. So when her turn came, she said, Spider-Man. And then one of the boys behind her got annoyed because he was going for that, and then there was an argument.
You can't take Spider-Man,
shouted the boy. And Elsa said,
Pity, because I just did.
And then the boy said,
It's a pity for you, yeah.
And then Elsa snorted,
Sure,
because that is Elsa's favourite word in English. And then the boy shouted that Elsa couldn't be Spider-Man because only boys can be Spider-Man. And then Elsa told him he could be Spider-Man's girlfriend. And then he pushed Elsa into a radiator. And then Elsa hit him with a book. Elsa still thinks he should thank her for it because that's probably the nearest that boy ever got to a book. But then the teacher came running and put a stop to it all and said that no one could be Spider-Man because Spider-Man only existed in films and so he wasn't a literary character. And then Elsa got possibly a bit disproportionately worked up and asked the teacher if he'd heard of something called Marvel Comics, but the teacher hadn't.
And they let you teach children?
Then Elsa had to sit for ages after the class, having a chat with the teacher, which was just a lot of teacher babbling. The boy and a few others were waiting for her when she came out. So she tightened the straps of her backpack until they hugged her tight like a little koala hanging onto her back. And then she ran. Like many children who are different, she's good at running. She heard one of the boys roar,
Get her!
and the clattering of footsteps behind her across the icy asphalt. She heard their excited panting. She ran so fast that her knees were hitting her ribcage, and if it hadn't been for her backpack, she would have made it over the fence and into the street, and then they would never have caught up with her. But one of the boys